Hi folks, and welcome back to the Q&A series. Today we've got something a bit different. We're talking to a producer. His name is Steve Baker. He's based in the south of the UK. He will play on your track, he will mix your track, produce your track, get it all ready for the finished product. He's got some really interesting stuff to say. He's got some great take on some of the things we talk about. So let's get into the discussion and see what's going on in Steve Baker's world. Steve Baker, welcome to New Music Review. Podcast in the Q&A, whatever you want to call it nowadays, and tell us what you're all about, who you are, where you are, what sort of stuff you're up to.
Oh, well, yeah, I'm in Brighton. I'm a musician, producer, I guess all-round music maker. So I do mixing, I've got a small studio. I work with singer-songwriters primarily who bring songs to me, and then I do the arrangement, production, recording, mixing, I play a bunch of instruments, and I'm been doing that for a very, very long time. So I find, like, depending on the project, it depends what I do. So it's a little bit of an everything. What am I up to? Well, it's sort of talking about new projects at the moment. I've got an artist I've just finished working on a few tracks with. She's like a really lovely sort of dream folk artist. Mm-hmm. And we've just finished three songs. There's an album, potential album project coming up. I've always had lots of conversations, never really being too sure what the next thing's going to be. And then while I'm not doing external production work, if there's a little gap, I just switch into my artist mode, which is because I'm also produce my own music and write my own music. So I've got an absolute mountain of material that I kind of chip away at and sculpt, and then try and work out whether it's what to do. So right now I'm actually quite focused on my artistry because I'm sorting out collaborations and remixes, and I'm starting performing. So I'm working out that. And then just rolling along, trying to make ends meet as a producer.
Well, yeah. And so if an artist decides that they want to contact you and ask you to see if you can work with them, or they want to work with you, what is the first thing that happens in that instance?
Well, that's a good question. If they've just reached out to me, just enter into a discussion, a consultation, or whatever. I like to ask lots of questions. I like to really get a sense of where they're going, what their goals are, lots of non-musical stuff. The discussion around music happens a bit later. It's more about who they are, really, and what they like. Are they a performer? Like, are they a storyteller? Are they how much of a producer are they in their own heads? Like, have they got positions they want to work? Like, lots of questions that are just sort of building a picture. They'll obviously have questions for me, but then it's generally just a little bit of a getting to know you.
And are you sort of bothered or interested in how established they are or how professional they are? You know, or if somebody just comes along and says, "Listen, I've just wrote this song. I've got an acoustic guitar. I don't play it very well, and I've got some lyrics. And here's my demo." Would you take that on?
Yeah, I've done a lot of that. I'm not. I've kind of crept into being a producer quite slowly and building up a repertoire, I guess a portfolio or whatever, in the last sort of few years. I've been making music for a very, very long time, and I've come through bands and writing and playing shows, and the whole time making my own music, learning. So I've learned what I've learned myself. And when I meet someone who's early in their journey, generally I can level with them quite quickly because I've been there and I kind of get that. And also I'm not like a name producer. I don't have an agent. I don't have a manager. I just work with people who are pretty new to it. So I think one of the things I want to do is actually be a bit more intentional about finding artists who are more established, because I feel like the working relationship would be different, and because they've got more in the past to bring into the process. And also I need to kind of understand what my role is in the context of their career.
Yeah, and maybe they've got experience of working with producers already.
Yeah, that would be quite good, because in a way there would be less, it would probably be more fluid at the beginning, but also they're probably going to have management and labels and other people that are maybe stakeholders in what we're doing. So pretty much, if you listen to my portfolio and everything I've done, it's nearly all new artists who aren't, in some cases they've come and gone, they just did it because they wanted to do it and they've gone down different paths. So you won't really see me on any like pop playlists or anything, but I don't really mind. I think if they're really, really, really early, I just wouldn't, because I don't think it's worth them investing. I think they should just do other things, you know, spend a bit more time writing, or, you know, get a little home set up and start demoing. But
Have you got any styles that you prefer or don't prefer?
Range of genres. And I'm not just talking about, a lot of people say, oh, they've got a wide taste. Like, I've got a hugely wide taste, and I really am deeply into all these different things So if someone brings hip hop to me, or I can have that conversation about that, and we can go down a beat making route, and I understand the sensibilities of like trap and grime, or I can do folk, or I can do indie rock, or I can do, you know, to some degree I can do R&B, depending on the sort of influences. I think R&B sometimes can be very orientated around musicians playing a groove, I think it's essentially, I like things that I've got a sense of opportunity to be different, something that's going to welcome experimentation. I love spontaneity, I love improvisation, so things that have got an opportunity for that.
And have you had many bands that have brought stuff to you that's been, that you think, well, this is already really great, you know, what can I bring to this?
A lot of the time I am building the thing from scratch.
Yeah.
That, you know, the thing I'm doing most is that the artist comes to my studio, we track their vocal and guitar, we build up the track, and then I'm just doing everything and making it, the mix and everything. In the case of mixing, where the music's already kind of been made and I'm just doing the last bit, I do less of that. I'd love to do more mixing, actually. If you stop telling people you're a producer, people focus on that. If you say you're an engineer, people focus on that. I do the whole thing. I don't have to. But it just ends up that because I charge a price per track that includes everything if they want it. If someone said to me, oh, don't worry, you're not going to mix this, I'd be like, great, okay, and then someone else would do that bit. I've only really mixed external stuff like maybe 10 or 15 times. And there's a pre-production, or there's a conversation like, okay, where is this at now compared to where you want it to be? Because often I can perceive it as done. Like, you're like, wow, this is great. But then the artist will go, no, and they'll send you a bunch of reference tracks of the artist, and you're like, oh, okay. So you've got it to 80%. You want it to be the final 100. And I like lo-fi, rough and ready music. So sometimes I will push back and say, you don't want to polish this too much.
You
know, keep it raw or whatever. But
I was going to ask you that, actually. Has it ever gone sort of horribly wrong, really? You know, have you got like the completely wrong idea of the vibe that somebody's looking for, and then they've just said, nothing like that, thanks.
No, that's my superpower.
Try and nip that one in the bud.
I just get it. People have said that to me, like, that's something I'm quoting about myself. People have said, we work with you because you just get it. And that's why I'm talking about the shapeshifter thing. I was mixing a bunch of stuff recently that I did also do additional production for. And the brief was, don't go too perfect. And I hate perfection. I like just mess and humanity. What, humanity? The human feel. And I like things to be a bit imaginative and in engaging. And so this artist is fantastic. We made a whole album song by song, and some of the reference points were actually really DIY. Like, I could tell that I couldn't replicate that sound because you'd have to replicate the recording process that made that. So I was like reverse engineering lo-fi. Like, stuff through weird tapes and panning things to weird places and using levels that were like the synthesizers were too loud on the chorus. And it was just to create that sense of imperfection. Whereas maybe another producer or engineer might have smoothed it all out or made it sound like perfect, but that's not what the artist's vision was. And so fun. It's like, yes, I get to do my weird stuff. But I don't like to polish things too much, and if there are mix engineers out there who can do that, so
I know we touched on earlier about the DAW thing, and I know it's not your favourite subject, but interested to know what your preference is quickly, and what sort of gear you're using, because, you know, there's a lot going around now about the M4 Mac and all this sort of gear that's supposed to be the bee's knees, and it's just wondering what you're actually using and what's working for you.
Yeah, I'm using an M1 MacBook, Logic Pro, Ableton Live. I've used Logic Pro since 2006, or Logic since 2006, Ableton since 2008. I've tried Cubase, Reaper. I don't think it's a conversation that I need to have. People can just Google what it is. You know,
yeah.
I can't into the conversation. If you've got a Mac, you're going to spend £200 on Logic Pro. It's everything and more, three updates. Yeah. So it's a complete no-brainer. If you haven't got Mac, then I wouldn't know what to suggest other than just learn it well and learn it for what you need to do with it. Some people talk about Pro Tools because that's where they came from, the engineering background, Pro Tools. I've never used Pro Tools, so why would I say it's bad? I would never say to someone, don't use Pro Tools, because it might be perfect for them. Do you know what I mean? So anyway, I think the computers have got so fast, you haven't got to worry about it. If you've gone beyond, say, 2021, they're on with you, nothing's going to be a problem.
No, I think it's about workflow, really, isn't it? Managing your workflow generally. You know, you can do a lot with not a lot if you've got the right workflow.
Yeah, I mean, I could talk about that forever, limitations just general creative philosophy. Like, honestly, the DAW conversation is just...
It's a separate thing.
It's
just a workhorse, I suppose, isn't it, for you?
Make your focus creating, but also the other thing is the stuff does need to work, right? So if you're having bugs, it's all, you know, you need to sort that out. But it isn't. I started making music very early on a Tascam 4-track, which I still use. Mm. And some of the stuff I'm doing for my solo project, because I like spontaneity, and that project's all about that. Every element in my tracks is performed once, and it was the first time I wrote it. That's what you'll hear. But the tape thing is interesting, because there's no grid, there's no editing capability in a track, so you just have a different mindset, and you allow more mistakes, because the hassle involved in doing it again is, you're like, oh, we're gonna lose the previous take, and how good. You just end up sort of leaning into the idiosyncrasies of something not being right. Like try a drum machine to sync with something else, it might go out a little bit, and then you've got to. But it has a character, which is a bit of a trope saying that, you know, it's got character, but it focuses the attention on the idea that you're having rather than the screen and the software that you're using. But I do that, but at the same time, I will spend hours editing something in Ableton, so I have both. Both mindsets. You know.
Yeah, I mean, I come from a tape background, so, you know, from reel to reels and up to multi-track cassette tape, digital audio,
been through
multi-track things, and then onto PC, well, Mac for me as well. But But I think it does give you a different perspective on things sometimes, having that tape experience, because you know, and people say, like, you've still got a 4-track, and I see people saying, "Oh, I want to get back into one." I said, "Look, it's got a place and it's got a sound, but it is in reality very impractical, really, in today's music. You know, just working with tape is just hard work. But like you say, you just have to be a bit more regimented and a bit more, I wouldn't say professional, but you need to know your stuff, don't you?
I guess so. I mean, maybe. I would be very hesitant to say anything that generalizes like today's music or this is the right way of doing it. Everyone's doing everything every way all the time. There's no rules to like, oh, this is how you should do it. There's a massive burgeoning lo-fi tape scene. There's a whole scene of music where they're just using the Roland SP-404 sampler. Mm. There's whole scenes where people are using there's everything. Limit yourself. I don't ever say, oh, like that's the right way to do it because it's quicker and easier. Well, quicker and easier doesn't mean better.
Definitely not. No, that's right.
It can mean better. So it's everything and everything. I steer clear of any form of black or white. This is the way in everything. Because there's always exceptions, and there's also like different ways to force limitations onto yourself. So I made a track with someone a few years back where we decided we were going to make a whole track just using the 4-track and a SM58, and then I'm going to import the sound into the computer to then try and build like something out of what we capture. And I had to like write the song structure down in a pad of paper. We had to recording the vocals, and I was triggering a drum machine at the same time. So we had to both follow the arrangement, rehearse it, do it. And then he messed up this whole bit and improvised a bridge. And then we ended up writing an entire new section of the song because he messed up.
Mm.
And that part of the song is almost the best bit of the song.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I've done...
If we were in the box, we would have just deleted it, and you know, so...
Yeah, I've done many mixes where we've had, like, four hands on the console. You know, my first console, or large console, was a Studio Master 16 or 24-track mixer.
Nice, you like.
And it was a great mixer. I loved it because it had tons of auxiliary sends on it, and I had a little rack full of outboard gear. But, like, many times we had a SMTE code generator going with the tape, linking the MC500 Roland sequencer, and plus all, you know, all the guitars and vocals on tape, and we're four hands all sort of only tweaking things, you know, just a little bit here and there, just get that up, get that right. But yeah, it's good fun. I mean, it's a great. Right. I think everyone should experience that, really.
I think so. I mean, I never have. I mean, I've never had to do any of that stuff. I can't, so I find it fascinating. My tape experience is limited to the four track.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think the point I was making is just it's not a right or wrong thing. You know, one thing will lead to something. So just do whatever feels fun. And then, you know, if someone is listening to this and they're thinking, what's he on about, the tape, forget, you know, then that's fine. It's not right for you. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying you should use it, but I'm saying it's right for some people. And I do think less, if you've only got four tracks, let's say guitar, bass, keyboards and vocal, if a song's sounding really good and you've arranged it well in those four things, you can listen back and you can just go, wow, that can be enough.
Yeah. I mean, do you know what?
You can bounce it to the computer and add more, or you can bounce in the tape. But it's interesting here, stopping at four things and having a little bit of a recce. Okay, that's quite good. Rather than just assuming that you're going to do 20 tracks, just start with four and stop, see where you're at.
Yeah,
and I thought that's quite a good arrangement trick doing that.
Yeah, I had a guy send me something once, and he said, I apologise for the sound quality. I've had to do it all in my room on an iPhone with a GarageBand or something or whatever. But I tell you what, it was great. It was really
nice,
good.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, if this guy can produce this on an iPhone in GarageBand, what's he capable of going forward? So I had to sort of help him push it along, just on the basis that he'd managed to do it like that. So
great.
What I was going to ask you was...
I was talking about that for way longer than I thought I would, sorry.
It's no problem. What I was going to ask you was, so you mentioned earlier that you had a kind of a fee for a track, a fixed fee for a track, let's say. How does that work? Do you put a time frame, or do you try and work to some sort of time frame when somebody sends you something in?
Yeah, I think the time frame... It can be confusing because I don't ever quote or work to the clock because I think that's not a good way to create whatever. And because I am doing the arrangement, the pre-production, the recording, instrumentation, editing, it's like quite a lot of different stages and I'm doing it all the time, like I'm overlapping them. But it's not a linear, there's not like a cutoff point of, okay, now we're stopping production, now we're starting mixing.
Yeah.
It all starts to happen. So I try and estimate based on a pre-production conversation. What's the scale and what is the scope? Two different things. How complex is the music? How complex is the arrangement of the structure of the song? If we're talking 2.5 minute verse, chorus, like, and it's guitar, vocal, I've got a pretty good sense of like, okay, we can do that in this much time roughly, and then I figure out the price based on that.
Yeah.
They pay that money, and then if the scope changes, then we top up.
Yeah.
So if halfway through or whatever, they go, oh, I want to get my mate into place and But yeah, it's tricky because I always go over. I always spend too long on stuff.
And, every
track I'm working on is my obsession for that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's in my head the whole time. I'm on the bus listening to it. I'm checking at home. I'm not signing off at the studio and forgetting about it. So I probably should be charging more, if I'm honest. I've been told by other people that I should be charging but yeah, it's the price per song. And then if I'm doing mixing, it's a similar thing. But
how far do you go before you send somebody, you know, the first idea of the track and say, this is where we're going?
Yeah, it depends on the brief. And it depends on how much trust and how much I'm being allowed just to do my thing. Mm. If it's like the artist is being more directing me a little bit more, which is fine, mm. like give me instructions, then I'll send something that's as close as possible to what they wanted, and then we'll do revisions. If it's like, oh, I don't really know, just do your thing, mm. then I will send more iterations because yeah, I'll do like a verse and a chorus of the vibe I'm going for, send them that, just so yeah, I don't end up going too far yeah. down a road. Everyone's in their own creative world. Hopefully, I love artists who are in their own creative world, who have their own ideas. Mm. That's really fun. And therefore, I'm a collaborator with their what they want. And there's way more conversation. There's way more being in the studio with that person, or that artist, and they could be describing drum sounds to me, or they can be playing me songs on Spotify going, listen to these strings on this track, mm. or whatever. I'm like, wow, okay, I wouldn't have thought that myself, but now I've had that reference, we can go. And so other people just don't really know, like, or they're not, haven't either, they haven't developed that internally. Like some people, did you notice, some people haven't got an internal voice.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that's right. Yeah, I'm sure they haven't.
Some people have, like me, I've got extremely vivid imagination sonically, and mm. I've got a lot of inner dialogue. And so like you heard that extra track, I could hear yeah. multiple versions of that track in at the same time. So if I'm being guided, great. If I'm being left to my own devices, it's all there, ready to go. But I think, yeah, it's down to communication. And if you're having fun and you've developed a little bit of trust with someone, it's about not caring if they don't like your idea. If you say to them, like, humor me for an hour, mm. I'm just do some stuff for an hour, don't shut me down yet, let's just try this. Yeah. And then an hour later, I've had my little play around I'm doing. And then I'll go, right, what do you think? And they might go, I like that bit. But at least I've had that hour, and they've trusted me just to try it out.
Yeah.
So if they go, I'm not sure, I go, okay, done. And we've just lost an hour, and that's it. And it all gets deleted, and we move on. You know?
Yeah, it is a conversation I've had with a few of the artists that I've done so interviewed already about collaboration. And I've asked them, you know, do you feel, because they've all been pretty much solo artists. And I've said to them, do you feel that you are missing out anything by not having a band or any more members around you to sort of say, do you know what, that doesn't sound very good, or should we try this? Yeah. And most of them have sort of said, generally we'd like to collaborate a bit more
yeah.
because we'd like someone else's input, you know, which is...
Yeah.
I don't think of too many people, even established and, you know, artists, successful artists who've been a totally one-man band that's made a massive success just on their own completely. There's not many of those around, is there?
Yeah, it's you're absolutely right. I'm sure there are some.
Yeah, definitely. And people who have done a lot.
Every single album you can think of, every single song that you know, everything that you are aware of has had a producer and a mix engineer, probably other people involved in the making of that.
Yeah.
So there's a reason for that.
Well, exactly.
But I've been with bands as a producer, so I would like to sort of see how that goes.
Mm.
But I find bands are sort of can be, at, like, I'm going to say amateur, not amateur, but, you know, like independent bands or maybe bands are starting out. I've been in so many bands. I've never had a producer.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't in our mind. So it's almost like you need to get signed or get some kind of representation externally.
Yeah.
Given a producer, I really think more bands should have a fifth member or a sixth member that is their producer from the start.
Yeah.
But I don't know why it isn't just in the normal way of doing things. You get the band, you get the songs, you rehearse, you write, you gig. But everyone else has got producers. Like, why are they not going, this is our producer?
So when an artist has got the track, they've done the track, you've more or less finished it, do you have any input in what they do with it next? Do you direct them to promote it or how to get it out there or anything like that at all in that scene?
If they ask me, I'm happy to give like insight. I wouldn't say advice because advice is dangerous. but in a word, not really. I don't see it as my responsibility. It happens naturally through me talking about it, and I like I do social media content. Yeah. If they give me permission, I will do content around how I've made stuff. I'll do little bits of studio recording or studio footage. Mm. Really, so like in terms of creating assets that they can use to promote themselves, mm. and then doing like Instagram lives or shared posts. But that's I'm in that as well. You know, that's promoting. Yeah. As in terms of giving them like help with promotion, that's not in my arsenal of services The artist really needs to take charge of that. They're paying me to make the thing. Yeah. They're paying me to mix it. I believe that it's their responsibility to make that product to a success. But if it's part of a conversation, I'm always happy to give insight.
Yeah, definitely. And I've found that, you know, a lot of people they'll spend all that time and effort with the likes of yourself doing what they're doing. Yeah. And then they just drop it onto Spotify and then sit there for a month saying, well, nothing's happened. And I said, that's because you've sort of bought a go-kart to an F1 race, you know, and you can pay your way into the race, but you're not going to win, you know, unless you're good.
It's a very big area of debate. And I almost find it intimidating. It's just so many people offering different solutions and platforms and yada yada. I'm older now. I'm not in the business of trying to be an artist. I'm an artist because I have to be, like, because I can't stop it. But I'm not really trying to promote myself or chase it. I'm 45. I'm doing different stuff. But if I was like a younger artist or earlier in my career and I was making a product and I had invested the money in a producer, I would definitely be getting external help.
Yeah.
I don't want to say management because I would maybe get a mentor or I'd get a couple of mentors.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I would just really study that. I wouldn't even have that conversation during the production process.
No. I think the problem is and when you say that about, yes, everybody wants those people. The trouble is, it's just a wash with, like we talked about earlier, before we started this, you know, everyone thinks anyone taking any money off you is a scam. You're not going to get anywhere. They're just going to, and yeah, to some degree, it probably is a little bit. You know, I wouldn't say it's a scam, but it's a service someone's offering. All it means is they've got a bigger audience than you have, you know, and it's exactly what I do, but I do it for free.
So the problem is a ubiquitous problem. Every artist wants exposure and fan base. So it's a very big target to aim a product at.
That's right. That's right.
I have my own. I have some sort of maybe less popular opinions about the goals of an artist or a band. Mm. There's lots of different levels to it. I've been involved in different levels of it. And I've also observed this as a sort of hobby and a passion for my whole life. I'm also starting to train as a coach and understanding a journey and trying to sort of set goals and realize what people's objectives are and stuff. Mm. And I don't see many artists talking about that. I see them striving, putting themselves out there, but I don't get a sense that anyone really knows what it is that they're going to get when they get it. Well, like, do you definitely want to be a professional artist?
Yeah.
You sure? You really fucking sure?
Like, No, I think it's a point. It's a good point. Yeah.
Like, they want to play shows. They want people to buy their music, and they want to have fun and write. That's cool. You can do all of that stuff without being professional. Mm-hmm. If you want to be a pro, the evidence is all out there. All of the stories, it's been done millions of times over by other people.
Yeah.
Look at the work involved. Look at the luck involved. Look at like every successful artist you've ever heard of. Ask them how they got there. They didn't have a plan. It happened through a series of being in the rooms with the right people and having management and label. All I think is that maybe these companies that are selling services aren't selling them based on a plan. They're selling it based on this idea, imaginary idea.
It's just revenue, really.
I think an artist should hire a coach or get someone who is good at coaching, someone who's good at mentoring. Mm. Have them sit down and say, where do you want to be in a year? What's your plan? Da, da, da. And then have check-ins with them. Have because that's how you achieve things.
Yeah, I really, my experience so far is that, and I'm sure that people will disagree, but I think as a new artist, trying to get yourself on playlisting on Spotify is just a waste of energy, really.
I think so. I find it hard to see otherwise.
But it soaks up so much time of people's time, like you say, when they could be being more creative in producing music rather than trying to push what they've already got. Although you have got to do it. You have got to put it out there, but I just don't think you need the level. You know, you've seen it yourself on Threads, the obsession with followers and numbers. It's just...
And moaning about not having money. It's like, what have you done to get the money? You just made a few songs. Like, come on, work.
Yeah.
I'm only being a bit like provocative because I feel like it does help the conversation to be a bit finger pointy.
Yeah.
I think basically, if you were playing shows consistently, the right shows, so don't just go and play any old show, play the right shows, find the right promoters, the right support slots, play those shows, right? If you have something at that show that you can sell, someone will buy it.
Yeah.
If you're good and if you've practiced and if you've built your visuals and etc. So if you took whatever merch or a CD or whatever it is to that show and five people bought it and it cost 20 quid and you probably make 15 quid of that or whatever, nice bit of cash, right? If you do that consistently, that person who bought that thing is a fan of yours.
Yeah.
Guess what? They gave you their hard-earned money for your thing.
Yeah.
What are you talking about streaming for?
Yeah.
Like it's nothing.
That's right. Yeah.
You've got to think, like, what should you be wasting your energy moaning about not getting paid for Spotify for less than 1,000 streams?
Should
you shutting up and go and play some shows?
Yeah, I think if you...
I'm not backing Spotify, by the way. I'm just saying 1,000 streams would probably be... If it was paid fairly, you'd probably be like 20 quid.
Yeah.
So you're moaning about 20 quid.
Yeah, it's probably not even that, to be honest. But yeah, you're right. Yeah, the whole streaming world's a different conversation. I have many of those discussions on other things. But so
I do get quite heated when I talk about this.
Well,
my passion coming through.
Yeah, a lot of people do, you know, and this is why it's better to talk about it like this, because it comes over a lot more differently to when someone's, if you just written down what you just said in a text on Threads, you know, it would get hammered, wouldn't it? Because
it'd be really good for my stats though, my engagement.
Well, yeah, of course. It's good for your numbers.
So, no, I mean, I do have these conversations every now and again, and I do try and I don't ever get to the point where it's getting insulting or like negative. It's just, I've got a point. If I've been allowed to make the point and someone's got a counterpoint, that's a conversation. It's great.
Well, that's what I say to people. I say, look, it's a discussion. That's my whole thing on the Reddit scene. You know, people get quite argumentative and I say, look, it's just a discussion. You've got an opinion. Yeah. I've got an opinion. Yeah. I'm not saying I'm right and you're wrong.
Exactly.
But it's just an opinion.
Yeah. So it's all good. We could just have this conversation and go back to our lives.
Well, that's right. Yeah.
So... But I remember learning quite a lot about the record industry in the early 2000s from friends who were in it. And from my own research, learning about major record deals and stuff. Sorry, I won't go on for too long about this, but it's related to this because people maybe don't know this information, but when you record, major labels used to sign probably 10 bands and drop 9 of them.
Yeah.
They lost money on all of those 9 acts, but the one that they did succeed got all, you know, they, all the other acts were a write-off. So people forget that if you're in a band that got signed to a major label, you might get 25 grand advance or £1 million advance, whatever. You might never recoup that money. You get dropped. You're back to square one. Like if it's, that wasn't good for the artists.
No.
The major labels weren't good for the artists and spot streaming's not good for the artists, but something had to stop people from stealing the music for free off Napster or whatever.
Yeah.
So I just think there's other conversations to be had. Yes, we could fix the streaming model and make that, whatever the pricing is and whatever the subscription is could be tweaked, sure. But I think if you are an artist and you're making music and you're expecting to get an income from it, it's not going to come from streaming ever.
No.
It's going to come from fans,
it's
basically.
It's going to come from live. I think playing live and interacting like we are right now, interacting directly with even just one person or two or three people at a gig can make them talk about you for a lot longer than just listening to
Absolutely.
A track on a streaming service. So I think that's
and I like some weird ass music, and there's an audience for everything.
Definitely.
Some of the gigs I go to are the weirdest, most experimental stuff, and it's a packed room full of people, and they're buying an album, and it's like crazy, nuts, avant-garde stuff. Just because you're not making pop or like songs that you think people like, doesn't mean you can't.
Yeah, definitely. I saw something probably last year now, and they were talking about something like this, and they were saying that there's a band out there, and don't even ask me what the name was, but they were primarily instrumental. They didn't stream anything or anything like that. They weren't on any streaming services, but they sold out these arenas.
Amazing.
Because people just loved the music, and the only way they could get to hear it was to go to the gig.
There you go.
And
I love that that's happening. I think that's great.
It worked a treat. But so let me just drag it back a little bit. are you offering the full package? Are you doing mix, playing on it, mixing it, mastering it, putting it on a final, whatever they want it on, and giving it to them?
If that's the brief, yes. I don't master.
Okay.
I don't do mastering of the stuff that I've recorded, produced, and mixed.
Okay.
So I have a few different mastering engineers. So no, I don't do that. But I do what's required of me, mm-hmm. and also I'm open to doing other things. A lot of writing. I write music. It is hard, but yeah, I'm offering a full package, but I'm not limited to a full package. I'm quite interested in having discussions around maybe if there's a band who have got a bunch of songs and they're not really sure what to do in the studio, like offering a pre-production thing, or if there's an artist who maybe has like had a whole album made themselves. I love artists who made their own music at home. Like maybe they've got a little studio or whatever, or garage band. If they've got a product where they're just about to release it, I would strongly advise, this isn't just selling the idea of what I do, even have to be me, don't release it. Get a producer to just listen to it, or a mix engineer to listen to it, because they're not going to mess with your video. They're not going to change it. They're not going to destroy it.
Yeah.
Someone like me will take your wonderful world that you've created on your laptop and just make it deeper and wider and a better version of what it is.
Yeah.
So I want to encourage more people to actually make their own stuff at home. And so that wouldn't, like, I've just done some stuff for an artist called Made Escape, where I didn't even meet them. Like they recorded their own vocals, their own piano, their own ukulele. And then I turned these demos into these big things. And that was the brief. Mm. So it was like so fun. And yeah, she could have just gone down the road of just putting out herself, and it would have been nice. Mm. But now it sounds like.
Well, this is. I've had this conversation again with a few people about saying, you know, have you ever thought about, especially when stuff comes through on the likes of Groover or stuff for reviewing other routes? And I've said to people, you know, it sounds good, but have you considered some songs, you just got this feeling that these have been home recorded, home mixed, home produced.
Yeah, I can tell.
There's just something missing, isn't there? And I say to them, have you considered just getting this, you know, send it to a mix engineer? No, what do I want to do that for?
They get offended
or
something.
To make it better, actually, that's why.
Yeah. There is such a thing as better.
Yeah, there is, yeah.
Rick Rubin talks about that all the time. And whatever you think about Rick Rubin, he seems to just want better. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what better is.
Yeah.
He's just saying, inexplicably, that's better. And if that means, and yeah, you're right, you do hear stuff where you're like, oh, I can hear this. Is if the sound of something is distracting you from the experience of the music, it's not right. If the sound of it is infused with the music, so something can be really roughly recorded and not polished and really ropey, but be perfect for that music.
Yeah.
But if something's like indie pop or electro pop or something that typically the general kind of accepted standard is something that's quite immersive and quite lots of low end and lots of good drum sounds and stuff. You can tell sometimes exactly what someone's trying to do.
Yeah.
But they haven't got that ear, right?
Yeah,
so when someone's hiring me, they're not hiring me for my technical stuff. They're hiring me for my ear, my brain, my taste.
Yeah.
Some people just, I don't want to get negative because everyone's on their own journey, but there should just be more acceptance of criticism from people who make their own music and not taking it personally. Like,
yeah.
If someone says, have you thought about getting it mixed? They're not slagging your music off. They're encouraging you.
Okay, cool. So I'm going to drop it on you now. And if you don't want to do it, I'm going to I won't put it in the video. if someone who's watching this and gets to this point has a track that they would like you to listen to and see if you can do anything with it and help them out for free, would you be interested in, would you have a listen to it for them?
Yeah, of course.
And just give them some pointers, some advice, whatever.
Yeah, my previous comment being relevant still, don't get offended if, you know, if it's like you want to try and maybe get this. But yeah, absolutely. If someone's up for that input, they're already on the right mindset, you know.
Cool.
If someone's like open and they're asking questions, then they're on.
Well, I always like to sort of give people who've contributed to what we're doing, I like to give them something back a little bit if we can. Yeah. And anyone that's watching this got to this point, I think they've deserved to get something out of it. If they've got a song, I'll help them promote it.
Oh, good. Yeah. Well, hopefully what I've wang on about makes some kind of sense. You know, but
it's been great.
And it's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of things to talk about. It's something that, you know, if you spend your life doing something, you just end up with lots of different perspectives.
Cool. Okay. Well, Steve, it's been great talking to you, and I hope I haven't taken too much of your time. I appreciate you making some time for us.
No, not a problem. And, it's fun.
And hopefully we'll stay in touch in other areas. Yeah. All right, Steve. We'll sign off, and I'll catch you again, and good luck with whatever you're doing.
Thanks, Tim. Have a good one.
No worries. Cheers.
See you later.
Bye-bye.